In my life before I became a minister, I used to work at a store that is no longer, but some of you might remember. It was in downtown Vancouver, and it was called the Party Bazaar. You remember? And it had this big balloon out, and our motto was celebrate every day. And Halloween was our Christmas, as you might imagine. We lived for Halloween. Everything we did was targeted towards, how's Halloween going to be? How's this going to fit into Halloween? And one of the things that I noticed with Halloween is people, especially at that time, 10 years ago now almost, that people would come in, and we were at that time the only adult costume place, almost. We were the ones that had it all, and we decorated like crazy, and it was an experience to walk into the store. It was not going in to buy a costume, it was going in to find a Halloween experience, and costumes and accessories were like the bonus, the experience, the music, the things jumping out and playing, and the staff all having fun, and all of that was part of this experience. And people would line up, like we would have security outside lining up and letting people in because we had so many people who would come. And what was so interesting is that as soon as adults put on costumes, they transform. They have so much, it's as if somebody has given them a little check mark that says, it's okay to have fun now. And the biggest transformation that we saw is as soon as someone puts on a wig. I don't know what it is about a wig, but as soon as you put on a wig, it's like you're carte blanche to be something different and play in a way that is energizing and fun and silly. And I think that's magnificent. My encouragement, of course, is to try and do those fun and silly and playful things even if you're not wearing a wig. But if that's what it takes to get the check mark, wear a wig every day. What was true also is looking at all of the costumes, they were all about transformation. Whether it's a fairy tale costume, or whether it's a superhero costume, or whether it's a costume that is an animal, they always imply this ability for us to transform. And at a basic level, if you think of any successful story, it almost always includes some sort of change, some sort of transformation. And of course, we are all in our own story. And a story always has a hero. Today, I want to speak about the idea of the hero's journey. It is something that was sort of captured by Joseph Campbell in the mid-60s, I think it was. And basically what he realized is that any successful story kind of goes through some stages, and that these stages are the elements that make a story successful, that engage us. Why do they engage us? Because we can see ourselves in the story. Now, his stages of the story, of the hero's journey, are like 17 or something. So I won't do that to you. So I'll do the hero's journey from sort of my point of view, with the idea that all of us are on this journey. And I see it as three major stages. The first stage is what I think of as the calling stage. It is also, all stages require courage. So that's sort of the underpinning of being the hero in your own story. We all have courage. And what we find is that we start with the status quo, with where we are. So think of any story that you have ever watched anywhere, and it starts with the hero, or soon-to-be hero, having a pretty normal life of some kind. Like, think of The Hunger Games with Katniss, and she's doing her thing with her family, and the society may not be terribly happy society, but the status quo is that they're living, they're doing their thing. For us in our life, the status quo is exactly where we are now. And there's no real need for change, there's no call for change going on. Until shift happens. Something happens. And that something propels the hero, but not always right away. What typically happens is the hero realizes that there's something that should change, that they could change, that they'd like to see shift, and they are in the power to do a little bit of something about that, and the first thing they do is, I'm not going to do that. So we go through the cycle of a call to action or a longing for action, followed pretty quickly by a refusal to answer that call. And we sometimes stay in that cycle for our lives, where we want to do something, but we don't quite get to it. Want to do something, don't quite get to it. And we see it in big things, like career changes and relationship changes and societal changes. But they also happen in little habits that we have, like sitting down to write a talk, where I could do it now, but I'll find something else that's much more compelling, like vacuuming. And there's this call to action and this refusal to get into the discomfort of it. And sometimes what happens then is that shift that happens, that forces the action, is A, you run out of time, or B, there's some sort of signal that this has to change. It may be that a mentor shows up, or it could be something as random as you see a sign along the side of the road, and it's your final, like, okay, I get it, I got to do this now. Sometimes it's something outside of your control that propels you. So sometimes it's a mentor, sometimes it's a tormentor. But something finally forces you to cross from your comfort zone to something different. And it really feels like you are stepping into an unknown, taking a major leap. And the only person who can make that change is you. So you cross the threshold from the comfort, even if it was a discomfortable comfort, which I think all of us could probably identify with. We've all put up with things, perhaps, that are uncomfortable, but we know what they are. And then we shift by taking this walk across into the unknown, into the journey of the hero. So that's step one, is that crossing over from listening to the call and then crossing over. And the question before we even get to that is, what are you longing for and hearing a call about that you are refusing? And if you are, guess what? It's okay. Because that is predictable. It is. Sorry, Barb, I know she's not here and she hates it when I use the word normal. But it is abnormal human behavior to recognize that there's something that might be beneficial if we shift it, and yet we don't. Too uncomfortable. So that's the first. The call, the refusal to call, the cycle of that, and then breaking the cycle, stepping into the unknown. Then we're on this journey, and imagine a path. Imagine, you know, the superhero, the dude in the cape with walking along the path, green on every side, going into the mountains, Lord of the Rings style. Imagine that's us. We have this mentor who has either inspired us to take the step, or we have the memory of the tormentor to tell us that this is what we want to do. And so we move into this stage, which I think of as commitment. And commitment works in three phases. Once we've entered in and said, yes, we're going to do this. The first is that we actually don't do all of it alone. So in every story, you will see that the hero finds supportive companions. In The Wizard of Oz, Dorothy collects companions, the Tin Man, the Lion, the Scarecrow, and I'm forgetting one. Tin Man, Scarecrow, pardon? 73? Is it? Oh, and then the dog. The dog is with her too, so that's her other companion. And what's interesting about those is they're all looking for different things, right? Strength, heart, courage, which are representative of the things that we need when we're on this journey. So these companions join us on this journey. Jesus had 12 disciples. We have Luke Skywalker with Yoda and all of his sidekicks, Princess Leia and so on. I have to throw a Star Wars reference in there. Life would not be complete if I did not. But can you see how every story has these companions? And the companions are there to walk beside the hero and at times uplift them and remind them that they can do it, because the companions can see the greatness within the hero that sometimes the hero cannot see for themselves. Metaphysically, of course, the companions are the parts of us that will support us on our journey, that are there beside us, walking with us. It may, in real life, be that the companions are a support group, an AA meeting, a spiritual community, a family, a group of friends to hold you accountable. A hero surrounds themselves with companions who support them. And yet the heroes don't trespass. They walk beside, they don't cross over. They let the hero be the hero, and they are happy to be the sidekicks, if you will. And so the question that I ask you to think of is, who are the people who you could draw on? Who are the organizations that you can draw on? The systems that you can draw on as you're making your transformational journey of any kind. As a result of working with these companions, then, we come to the next part of commitment, which is finding the skills and honing our skills to make the change. So imagine that you've got a habit that you'd like to break. I mean, heroes' journeys do not need to be about saving the world. Sometimes they just need to be about saving dinner. So it doesn't have to be a macro. It can even work on the everyday. What are the skills that would support you in making this change? Because you're breaking a cycle. And so in the movies, of course, you see someone doing drills and using the force, and sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. And there are all these little challenges, mini challenges to learn from, to overcome. And at times the challenges are a test of commitment because they will fail. And you think you've got this, and it turns out you don't, and the strategy that you thought would work isn't going to work, and you're like, I'm out of here. I'm going back to the way it was before. I'm going to cross back into the uncomfortable but known that I didn't like, but it's more comfortable than failing all the time. And this is where having the companions is helpful, because they help bring you back and remind you of your goal. And remind you that you didn't learn to walk without the occasional stumble. And you didn't learn to read by reading Love and War and Peace. You began to read with Janet and John, like baby steps. And so, commitment includes continuing to learn, continuing to learn from your failures, continuing to learn from what worked, and honing your craft until you become the master. And then the third step of commitment, which is something you don't see in the movies very often because it's boring, is the place where the hero separates from the challenges and separates from the companions and goes into a place where they contemplate, where they mentally get themselves ready, calm themselves down before they meet the dragon, before they say the words that need to be said before they take on this challenge that they have been so afraid of. And it is in this calm place, which sometimes happens after the hero fails at a challenge, they'll go off to calm themselves down and also to gain clarity again about what their vision is. And so this happens prior to the big battle always. But we don't always see it in the movies. It is that final going within, that Gethsemane moment that Jesus had of, I'm all alone. Do I have to do this? It's not too late. Do I have to do this? I'm going to do this. And then finally, in this commitment place, this committed to change place, the final battle happens. And in the movies, of course, it's a destruction and always accompanied by lots of noise and blare and crap that unfortunately we're seeing on our planet today. And my suggestion is that we take the calm with us when we go and face the dragon, so that instead of overcoming the dragon, we tame it. Instead of finding a way to have power over, as the heroes too often do, and then they become the villains themselves. That instead that we change our relationship. So this is the final change step. And it's always sort of Hollywood style is this big destructive thing, but big destructive things lead to big destructive things. And so my idea is that here is where we should make stories less interesting, but more intriguing and actually more challenging. And that is to take whatever it is that feels like the enemy and change your relationship to it. Because all of the skills that you have learned as the hero with companions, staying calm and refining as you go, are all designed for the good of all. And we don't live in a Hollywood movie where we need to destroy the bad guy, the bad boss, the crappy relationship, whatever it might be. Maybe all we need to do is find a way to change the relationship to it and then leave without it creating more anxiety, anger, and war. Remember, anytime you're in war, you're in a place of, we are right. By definition, that means the other is wrong. So instead, I encourage you to think about the idea on your hero's journey of not depressing, suppressing, rejecting the things that are your tormentors, but rather to find a way to become different in relationship to them. So that then, just like the witch in The Wizard of Oz, they just melt. They just melt away. Because sometimes I think the reason they seem so big is because we've given them so much power. Courage. The courage to cross over. The courage to be committed. The courage to change how you behave, how you react. We are each the hero in our story. And even though we're not saving the world, in some ways we are. Because when we change, the people around us will shift how they behave. And then the people around them will shift how they behave. And there is a ripple effect that we are not aware of on an everyday level, but I am convinced is there. So have courage. Have courage to cross into the unknown. You will be supported. There are supports. You can expect to fail and pick yourself up and start all over again. And every step that you take, one step forward and three quarters of a step backwards, is still progress. And then change. Shift happens. Be the hero in your story. It will be the hero that makes a difference in all of ours. I bless you.